Well, if you've been with us the last few weeks, you might be thinking, man, what kind of crazy church is this? We've had Kelly Clarkson, and we've had Mariah Carey, and now we've got the boss, you know, Bruce Springsteen. I did hear a few of you singing, which is great. That's awesome. I mean, you know, you may ask what kind of crazy church is this, and yet we are a little bit on the nuts side. You know, people often say, you know, you're a Baptist church, and we're like, well, not a good Baptist church, but anyway, that's beside the point. You know, why would we take time every week to look at these songs? What is that about? Because these are secular songs, they're playing on the radio. I mean, that song didn't mention Jesus once, you know, and I mean, that's just terrible to play in church, right? Well, there's a reality about the music we listen to, and we all know this. There's something incredible about music. Music isn't just something benign. It's not just something that's out there and we listen to it and we think, oh, that's nice and sweet. Music has a way of coming into our lives and penetrating our minds and penetrating our hearts and really begins to reshape how we think and what we believe about things. And I think even the Christmas songs that we've been listening to have a way to do this to us. I mean, it causes us to really rethink about maybe even what we think about God in some way. And today, I want us to look at Santa Claus. I want us to think about that and how sometimes we transfer our thoughts and our theology of Santa. And I know you're probably thinking, we have a theology of Santa? Of course you do. You have this idea of what you believe about Santa Claus. And I want to look today at how sometimes we transfer that. And it doesn't just stay with Santa. We transfer that to our theology of God, even to the extent of how we think we can be good enough in both Santa's eyes and in God's eyes to make sure we stay on the nice list and avoid God's naughty list. My name is Brent. I'm the lead pastor here, and we're really glad that you're here with us. We're in this series called The Christmas Album, and every week we're looking at these songs, and it's been a lot of fun. And hopefully what we're doing is we're figuring out how when we can replace the influence that sometimes this music has on us with a little better understanding of who God is, a little better theology, a little better thinking, and to reorient us a little bit to really what the Bible teaches us about who God is and how we should live. I mean, we talked about expectations, we talked about stuff and relationships, and so today, let's talk about that big figure in our lives. For kids, it's Santa Claus. We want to be good, but even as we grow up and as adults, you know, we carry that Santa Claus theology over into our relationship with God. You know, for me, this may have been one of the first secular songs I remember learning. You know, you sing it in school. Did a little research on it this week, and I thought, how long has this song been around? You may be amazed like I was. This song's been around since 1934. It's a long time. It was first sung on a radio show then, and in the first 24 hours after it aired on the radio, there were over 500,000 orders for sheet music of this song. Now, that tells you a lot. The times were a little different back then. And then there were 30,000 records sold in that first 24 hours. Records. You guys know what records are? They've made a comeback, right? So we all know what those are. If you don't just look at the artwork on the screen, it'll explain it to you. This song is so incredibly popular. You know, it's been recorded by over 200 different artists from everyone like Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Mariah Carey's done a version, the Jackson 5, Michael Bublé, Alvin and the Chipmunks have done it, Pentatonics have done it a cappella, and even Justin Bieber has done it. So, I mean, this is a song that everyone has done, and it is incredibly popular. And you know, it's so popular that this is the song that saves the day in the movie Elf. Do you remember at the end of the movie, Santa's sleigh needs a little Christmas cheer, and she stands up in front of the crowd, and everybody starts singing this song, and miraculously it brings enough Christmas cheer, and Santa's sleigh flies, and Christmas is saved. But have you ever really listened to this song? I mean, really, have you ever really listened to this song? I mean, check this out. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. And here's where it gets a little creepy. He sees you when you're sleeping. I mean, we'd get a restraining order against this guy if it was anybody else. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, be good for goodness sakes. I mean, after all, if we were to change Santa Claus to, I don't know, somebody like Pastor Ryan, this takes on a whole different philosophy. I mean, I don't know that I'll be able to sleep tonight, but then again, he would know, so I can't get away with it. Now, I will tell you, I'm not here to bash this song. I'm not here to take it out of your rotation or your playlist, but as I said, there's something about this song that brings to the forefront our theology, our understanding of who Santa is. And I think it has shaded our understanding of who God is, especially when we consider how God feels about us, why we do the good things that we do, how God will react to us when we do bad things, and how we can make sure we're on God's nice list when we die. All important questions. And we want to look at that today. I've shared before that I grew up kind of with a really weird theology. I'm not sure why. I don't blame my parents. I just kind of had this idea that if, I'm not perfect. You guys know that, right? If you gasp right there, it helps the podcast, just so you know. I'm not perfect. There you go. Thank you. See, we get that. We'll cut the first take. But I'm not perfect. And when I would mess up, you know how I would always think about things? I'd be like, oh, good. Okay, God's going to get me. I've made the naughty list with God. What's going to happen? And then I could put events together in my life and just assume it was God coming after me. So, for example, I might have an impure thought. Guys do that occasionally. It just happens. It's horrible. But hey, have an impure thought and you're going, oh, no. Something bad's going to happen. Then on the way home, I'd be speeding and I'd get a speeding ticket. And I would think, oh, there it is. God got me. Am I the only one? It's dark in this room, so I can't see everybody, but I'm seeing a lot of, no, you're not the only one, head shakes. But that was my theology. And really, when you break that down, that really is kind of seeing God more as Santa, because, oh, there's Brent, he's off the nice list, now you're on the naughty list. Oh, I've got you, so now I'll put you back. And we play this game as if God is constantly doing this with us throughout our lives. Oh, now you're naughty. Oh, okay, good. Woo! Good thing you did. Is that really how God is? Because I think many of us live this way. I think especially outside the church, there's this understanding that this is exactly how God functions. And that's what I want us to look at today. Is this how it is? Is God just keeping that naughty and nice list? Or is God different than what we think? Is it possible that he's better than we could ever imagine? And we can know for sure, even today, that regardless of what we do, we can be right with God. You know, thinking this way about God, trying to see if we can be right with God, it's not new to us. I mean, it's not a new phenomenon. Now, I will say, I don't think back in the day they had that crazy elf on a shelf thing. Any parents do that? Okay, we do that at the Clark House too. What kind of messed up is this? I mean, hey, kids, you better watch it, that elf. And he'll report on you. If I was a kid, I'd hide that thing. That thing would go missing day one. What happened to him? I don't know. I have no idea. He was here. He was hanging off the tree. And then I think the dog must have got it. I mean, honestly, isn't that a little bit crazy to tie into that theology? Because that elf is watching and he's going to report back to Santa. Now, they didn't have this in the first century. But as you read through the New Testament, you kind of come to this understanding that evidently, though, this was a prevailing thought. And it's kind of easy to understand, because when you read the Old Testament, you understand that Moses went to the mountain, and he came down from the mountain. And what did he come down with? Commandments. And then those commandments expanded, and there were 613 laws that people had to abide by and live by. And then all of a sudden, Jesus comes on the scene, and they're not really sure. A lot of people aren't sure how to take this guy. He's saying one thing, but it really goes in conflict with what they'd grown up hearing about. And so we can kind of understand why they had this idea that said, okay, look, here's this list, and I've got to make sure that I am following this list as best as possible. And so what you find is multiple times in the New Testament, the writers are going, yeah, it's been that way, but now it's different. Now there's something better, a new way of living that you don't constantly have to live in fear, cowering, wondering, am I going to get gifts for Christmas, or am I going to get a stocking full of coal? And so we see this over and over and over again. And today we're going to look at just one of these instances in the Bible. It's in the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy is one of the last recorded letters that we have that Paul wrote. It's called Timothy, and so we know that it was written to his protege, Timothy, the young man that he spent time pouring into. And so this is the last letter. Paul's in jail as he writes this, and what he wants to do is kind of give him some instructions and help him to understand the freedom, the peace, the joy that can come when we live a life that's truly following Jesus. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, listen to what Paul writes. We're going to read it verse 9 and 10. It says this, "He has saved us." So he is God. God has saved us and called us to a holy life, not because of anything we have done, but because of his own purpose and grace. This grace was given us in Christ Jesus before the beginning of time, but it has now been revealed through the appearing of our Savior, Christ Jesus, who has destroyed death and has brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. Whether we read it here, or it's in Ephesians 2, it's in Titus 3, and there are multiple other passages we could have picked for this morning, the one prevailing thought about being right with God is this: you can't do it. You can't do it. You won't, you didn't, and you can't. Author Tim Keller, in a great little book he wrote called Hidden Christmas, he wrote this. He says, "Jesus comes as the light because we are too spiritually blind to find our own way. Jesus became mortal and died because we are too morally ruined to be pardoned any other way." And what we see here is that for ages, mankind, humanity, has been obsessed with this idea of trying to figure out how to make the world a better place. How do we fix our problems? I mean, we see this in the news every day, whether it's poverty, whether it's education, whether it's immigration, whether it's Me Too, whether it's whatever. We have this idea that it's okay because we can fix this. We can pass enough laws, we can educate ourselves enough, we can do this, we can figure this out. And so we do just that. We pass laws, we create nonprofits, we do everything we know to do to try to fix ourselves, but the more we try, the more we realize that humanity really can't save itself. And before I turn the corner and give you the good news, I want to give you just a little bit more bad news. Because the truth is, no matter how hard we try, no matter how much effort we put into it, no matter how self-giving, philanthropic, altruistic we might be, we always will miss the mark. We just can't. Why is this? Because our best efforts don't address the real issue. Pastor Ryan talked about this last week. You know, we think we have a behavior problem, and we don't have a behavior problem. We have a heart problem. And unless we're willing to address the heart problem, unless we figure out what drives us, the core of our being, then we'll realize we will never be good enough. It's like a couple weeks ago, Ryan was telling me a story. He and William went hunting. And he said that before they went hunting, William had gotten Ryan's gun and went out and set the sight on his gun. And Ryan's in the stand, and he looks out, and he sees this beautiful deer, and he pulls the gun up, and he pulls the trigger. And he shot, and that shot went right into the ground, right in front of the deer. And, of course, he couldn't get the gun up. The deer runs off, everything. He was not happy about this, I'll say that. And depending on who you believe, Ryan or William, either the sight was off, Ryan's story, or Ryan doesn't know how to aim, William's story. I'll let you figure that out. But as Ryan sits in the stand, he's got a choice to make. He can continue to go, "Nope, the sight's fine, I'm just going to keep firing, and what's going to happen every time? It's going to go into the ground." He's got a bigger problem at stake. He's got a bigger thing. He's got to step back and he's got to fix the root of the issue. And that's the same way it is with humanity, with us. And I think Paul and the other New Testament writers knew this because they also knew that it was just human nature to try harder. We want to try harder. We want to see if we can do more. We want to do everything we can. And Paul here is saying, hey, you can be right with God. That's the good news. That's the amazing news that the world needed to hear, is that you've been trying to measure up and you've never measured up, but that's okay because you can be right with God. The problem is, it's not because of anything you can do. Now, how is this possible? How is this even in the realm of possibility? Because as we think about life, isn't everything in our life based on how we perform? Your grades in class are based on how well you do on the homework, how hard you study for the test. Your job, your raises, your promotions. Very rarely does somebody come up and say, you know, you've done a really mediocre job. We want to give you a $10,000 a year raise and a promotion. Anybody ever experienced that before? Didn't think so. Why not? Because it doesn't happen. You want the raise, you want the promotion, what do? You get in there and you bust your rear in. You work harder than everybody else. You stand out with the achievements that you accomplish. That's how our lives work. And even sometimes our affections toward our loved ones is based on how they perform. And that sounds really crazy, and none of us would say, well, yeah, that's how it is at my house. But isn't it sometimes your husband or wife, your children make you angry, and sometimes it's just like, I mean, I'll admit, Brent's a very black and white guy sometimes. My kids don't make the grades, and they know, don't let Dad get an email from the teacher telling me you didn't turn something in. And I'll start pulling stuff. You've lost television, you've lost PlayStation, you get bread and water, that's it. Because you have caused me to get an email again from your teacher. The child in this room knows who I'm talking to. But I understand, and as much as I love everybody's like looking back going, who's not here? Okay. But isn't that true? Sometimes as weird as we say, oh no, I would never make my love for my kids or my spouse, or I would never make that conditional. And yet, sometimes we do. It's all, you know, all of our life is based on how we perform and earning favor. And we carry that over to God. We carry that Santa Claus. Be good, you know. So how could God possibly be different? And the Apostle Paul says there's two things. Two things that come into play with God that typically, number one, we can't really bring into play, and the other we struggle with. And Paul says it's because of God's own purpose and His grace. Let's break these down. What is God's purpose? To understand this, we really need to go back to the beginning, to look at creation, where we see God creating everything around us, God speaking it into existence, and then He takes humanity and He forms and shapes us from the dust of the ground, and He breathes into us the breath of life. And He says something unique about humanity that He doesn't say about anything else in all creation. He says, we are created in His image. The deer, the dogs, as much as we love our pets, none of them can claim what we can. We are truly a special creation. And God's desire for us from the beginning was to live in relationship with Him and to have life and to know what it meant to really live. But because of our rebellion and our desire to be like God, we broke that relationship and sin and death entered the scene. And what we find, though, is that even there in this moment where this beautiful creation was destroyed, put yourself, parents, in that scene for a moment. You've set up your beautiful Christmas decorations. You've got, as I was leaving the house this morning, I saw Carrie had done some decorating. And I'm just thinking, if one of my children were to get up and get on top of the table and just go, woo! Carrie, I'm sure, would be like, that's okay. Let's restore this relation. No, if you know my, no. None of us would be like that. And yet, for some reason, in some way, that's exactly how God was. You know, we look at what happened in the Garden of Eden where God removed Adam and Eve, and we think, oh, that was harsh. But what if it wasn't harsh? What if it was the greatest act of love ever? In that garden was a tree of life, and God says, I can't have you living in your current condition forever. So I'm going to protect you from this until we can make this right. I'm going to separate you so that you don't have the potential of living this way forever, because this is not how I created you, and this is not how I want you to be. And even then, God's desire, His purpose, was to reconcile us, to restore the broken relationship between Him and us. And we know this because we know, as we read about who God is, at his very essence, God is love. Verses like John 3:16 that tell us, for God so loved the world. Or verses like 2 Peter 3:9. I love this one where it says, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. It's talking about God. It's talking about why he is so patient with us. It says, because he loves us so much, he doesn't want anyone to perish. He doesn't want anyone to die in their sin. He wants everyone to see the value and the love that he is offering. That's his purpose, relationship. And it's because of his purpose that it drives us to the second part, which is grace. And we've talked about grace a lot this year, but it's an incredible word I think we need to learn more about always, because I think we could all use a little bit more grace given to us and extended from us. What is grace? It's simply unearned or undeserved favor. It's a gift. Think of it just like Christmas. You get gifts at Christmas. Do you earn them? No. Even though that silly song says you do. Be good or you won't get any gifts. Anybody got coal in their stocking yet? Not me. They're given to you. These gifts are given to you by people who love you and care about you and want to bless you. Even though we say Santa's watching, gifts are still given. And did you catch what Paul said about the grace as he described it? He says, this grace was given to us in Jesus Christ. And here's the catch. Before the beginning of time. Now that's an interesting concept that I think we really have to understand. Because what Paul is saying there is that before you had the opportunity to do anything good or anything bad, that Jesus was and Jesus is. And that this plan for God's grace to be extended towards us happened long before you got here. And when we want to fall into that trap that says, yes, but I've done this, so God must like me more because I've done it. He goes, uh-uh. Look, my grace was extended long before you. Just so I want you to know that there's nothing that you did to earn it. It's a gift. And as it was stated, started before time began. And in the true miracle of Christmas, it was revealed when Christ was revealed. You see, the story of Christmas is not some self-help, do better, try harder story. The story of Christmas isn't the story of what you should do. It's the story of what God has already done. That's what makes this so incredible. The miracle of Christmas isn't about how we get to God. It's about how God came to us. Do you see how that flips the Santa Claus theology on its head? No. I want to earn it. I want to try. Put this on me. And God says, you don't want that. You can't handle that. But don't worry about it. I've taken care of it. And it's this amazing thing. And this is how God's grace works. Nothing you can do to earn his love. Nothing you've done could push him so far away that he would reject you. But, and this is a big but, just like when someone presents a gift to you, you have to receive it. And we can feign that false, oh no, you shouldn't have, and try to push it away. But in the end, if we refuse the gift, you don't get it. And the same is true with God. God's gift of grace is being extended to us. And there are people that are going, No, I don't want it. What's crazy is we think that, no, let me earn it. That'd be better. That'd be easier. And God says, it's just not that way. It's not easier. And it leads me to just ask this question. Are we still trying to earn our way to God and make things right on our own, which we really can't do? Or will we receive the gift of salvation that God is offering to us? He said, I think when we even take that statement, there's a couple of problems that for me come into my mind. And I think Paul writes about it here. When he says it isn't about what we've done, it may leave us asking the question, can this really be true? Is it really that easy? Is it really free? is the answer is yes. You see, I get that for many people, when you want a religious system, when you want a system that says you get right with God, you say, okay, tell me what I have to do. And you think, okay, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you're right with God. That's what we desire. And when somebody comes in, and when God comes in, and Jesus comes on the scene, and he says, nope, that's not how it is. It's a gift. Receive it. We go, nope, no. That doesn't seem right to me. That seems way too easy. And it is, but it's just the hardest thing ever. But the answer is real. It is that easy. And that's what Paul says. That is why Paul says what he does about Jesus. In Titus chapter 2, he says this. He says, for the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. Doesn't say to the good people. Doesn't say to the religious people. Doesn't say to the middle class people. Doesn't say to the white people. Doesn't say to anything else. It's the salvation that's offered to all. Yes, it may seem too easy for some, and they push God's grace away, and they continue to work and work and hope and pray that when they get to the end of life, all that they've done, all their good deeds will outweigh their bad, and God will say that they're okay. It's just not how it is. What we have to realize is those scales we're hoping work in our favor don't work at all, because Jesus has already done it, and he's taken the scales completely out of the picture. I think the other potential problem is this, is for those of us who are following Jesus, you see, time and time again, we see in church that people make a decision. And they say, okay, Jesus, I'll accept that gift. But the problem is they stop right there. They get that gift, and then they leave it wrapped, or they don't do anything with it. It never does anything to affect their lives. They never show any signs of growth, and they view their relationship with Jesus as this license to live however they want. And what Paul said in our verse in Timothy is he says, look, God calls us to salvation, but there's more to it. That's only half of the equation. Because the salvation that God calls us to leads us to, and God calls us to, a holy life. He says you're called to a holy life. Now, I realize that as I say that, some of you may say, oh, there's the catch. You're saying I received this gift, and then I have to do certain things in order to keep it. No. What I'm telling you is that when we receive a gift that's so incredibly life-changing, it will change how we live. We can't help ourselves. It's not that we have to live by God's rules and by God's laws and all this. It means we get to live in God's love, and it changes our desire. It changes how we want to interact with other people. But if we don't get there, if we look to see that, oh, I'm free, I've got Jesus, so I can do whatever I want, what that tells me is that if we see it that way, we really don't understand God's grace that he's given to us at all. Because a grace or a faith that doesn't change us isn't really enough to save us either. Even though God isn't waiting for us to screw up so he can zap us. When we've been rescued from death, when we've been freed from sin, when we've been given life, as Paul said, and immortality, we won't want to sin. Our motivation will be to live in a way that honors Jesus. Not because we have to, but because we get to. And just so you know, these two things are inseparable. You really can't have one without the other. They go hand in hand. Salvation and holy living. To think you can be saved and not be called to a holy life is nothing more than lip service and hypocrisy. And to try to live a holy life without grace and salvation is legalism and dead religion. You know, as we've talked about this, I want you to understand God is not some cosmic Santa Claus where we need to live every day in fear to say, oh, am I good enough? If we receive that gift of God's grace, he says to you today, you are good enough. Not because of what you've done, but because of what Christ has done on the cross. We have this miraculous exchange where when we receive that gift of grace, something transformative happens where the righteousness of Jesus Christ, his sinlessness is placed upon us. And that is what God sees. He no longer sees your sin. He no longer sees your failures. He sees his son, Jesus. If you're trying to earn your way to God's favor, Let me just tell you, that is one of the most exhausting ways to live. And it'll lead you to feelings of guilt and inadequacy and shame. And eventually it'll leave you to giving up when you realize you can't measure up. But when you receive the gift of God's grace and you start living in that relationship with Jesus, that's where you truly find the freedom, the joy, the peace, and love. How about you? Santa Claus theology penetrated your mind, penetrated how you live. Is it kind of coming out in how you deal with others? Maybe even how you relate to God? Is it time to set aside our Santa theology and bring on to us a theology of God's grace and His purpose to really understand what God has for us? As I said, it's a gift of love and joy and peace and hope and life. And the question for us is, will we receive that gift today?